across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Thursday morning, April 25th, 2024. Nice to have you along on another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. Whether you're joining us by app, social media, podcast, however it is you got here, happy to have you along on this Thursday. A gorgeous morning is what we have here over the lake. The sun's just coming up earlier. I can see it. If I feel a little discombobulated, it's because I was on Pete Schwab's show last night. So it kept me up a little closer to bedtime. But more importantly, apparently their audio on their show was a little bit lower. So I had turned my headphones way up last night and forgot about that. And if you hear those first that first little drum beat in Stevie Ray Vaughan's Crossfire to open up the show, you understand why I feel like I might have wet myself just a couple of minutes ago. But that's more detail than you need. Let's tell you what's coming up today. First off, your phone calls or texts, if you care to reach us at 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. We will have Joe Zepecki here later this hour. And before that, we'll be talking about how Republican legislators who have blocked millions for the UW system, they've blocked millions for drinking water, they've blocked millions to address a healthcare crisis in the Chippewa Valley, are now blocking millions in opioid settlement money. We'll give you details on that coming up. Again, as mentioned, Joseph Pecky will be here. Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be here to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court hearing arguments yesterday on Idaho's abortion law, their abortion ban, and whether federal law that requires emergency care in hospitals is somehow circumvented by this state law, raising the question, in all seriousness, how nearly dead do women have to be in order to get the health care that they need? Then later, we will have our Women Win Wisconsin segment powered by Motherhood for Good. We will highlight a state representative from the Fox Valley area, and then Luke Mathers will be along to help us review last night's episode of Top Chef. Temperatures around the area at 6 a.m. look like, oh boy, they are almost 20 degrees colder in many spots than they were this time yesterday. It is 32 here on Lake Wissota. I think it was 52 this time yesterday. Hayward's at 32, Park Falls 27, Wausau 28, Green Bay 29. La Crosse is at 39, Oshkosh 30, Madison 35. And it's 28 degrees in Waukesha, where we find one Greg Bach, who just he has that mischievous little grin on his face, almost like he was the one that reached over and turned my headphones up to 11 when the show got started. But he didn't. He's a nice guy. Mr. Bach, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing today, Pat?
I'm recovering nicely from that little jolt that we sometimes get sometimes. I'm serious. I'm sitting here just waiting for the song to start, waiting for the show to start, and then bop, what?
But what happened? And then Dr. Kreitlow's like, he's falling on the floor. Too much well, sound.
She has today off, so she's sleeping in. And so you can't. It's a very silent scream that I had to share with everybody here. But only myself. Only I got to hear it. It just has. It feels like Friday. This week is plodding along.
Yep, absolutely. I could not agree more. I was driving in today, and I'm like, oh man, today is what am I gonna do this? Oh, I still have another day to decide that because it's not Friday.
I don't know why. It just this week feels like it's run especially long.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
No, we'll make the most of it. Hey, look, if anybody has some PTO, some personal time off that they can use, or a hooky day or whatever, you got a couple of reasons to use it. One is that although the Brewers aren't at home, they're in Pittsburgh, but it's a day game, and 11 a.m. is when the pregame starts, so you could kick back and listen to the Brewers on some Civic Media stations. But also, it's probably the best day weather-wise. I understand that we're going to have the wind picking up again. It's going to be rainy in many spots throughout the weekend. So this would be the day, if you're going to play hooky, to do it. So what do you say, Greg? Should we wrap this up?
Well, I'm out of here, Pat.
Yep. Okay. We'll see y'all later.
Yep.
What would we do? Let's see.
Todd Alba, if you're hearing this right now, you're on board. All right, there you go. You're on.
Wouldn't it be great if we could just switch over to Todd's computer at home? Like, Todd, get up. Gets up in his little footy pajamas and, you know, does the rest of the show. It doesn't really work that way. So I was so amused to find this headline in Axios, which is a national, you know, political news website, by and large political news, but they also have some local outlets, which include the Twin Cities. And the headline was something like, oh, here it is, from Axios. We tried the 21-minute flight to Eau Claire. Because, again, there is a Sun Country Airlines is the one that serves the Chippewa Valley Regional Airport. And so the only flight you can really get most of the time out of Eau Claire is to the Twin Cities. And it is literally a 21-minute flight. It only gets to 7,000 feet. There's no beverage service because as soon as you get up, you're getting ready to come back down. And they were so amused by it. I think the thing that amused them most is that almost every other flight that is that short would use a smaller plane. But for Sun Country, all they have are Boeing 737s. So there were, let's see, were there 16 people on the flight that they were on that day as they were talking to people who really appreciate using it. They don't have to drive to the Twin Cities Airport and all the long lines and all the parking and everything. But it comes over our house here on Lake Wissota when it comes in. It's just so weird to see this big old 737 coming in from its 21-minute flight from the Twin Cities.
I just wanted to look it up, be like, well, how long is the drive? It's a little less than an hour and a half, and I imagine people are on the plane like, can I, which way is the bathroom? Oh, it's called holding it. It's 21 minutes, bro. Seriously. Yes.
You get nothing.
Right? Speaking of flights.
Yes.
I drive in every morning taking 94 westbound towards Milwaukee. And on my way, there is, on the west side of the road, there is a skydiving center. You can go skydiving and it's right off the freeway. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people skydive. I've seen the plane overhead. But what I've never seen before until this past weekend was the plane landing. Mm-hmm. And the plane, when it lands, is maybe 50 feet above the freeway.
Yeah.
It is terrifying. I thought I'm like, that plane does not look like it's going near an airport. And it looks like it's going down. Oh my God. Oh, no, it's just landing right there by the skydiving. Okay, cool. I mean, it is you could probably throw a tennis ball. If you were standing above it, throw a tesla and hit the plane. It's kind of freaky. I won't lie. Just kind of freaky.
On behalf of local authorities, Greg Bach does not recommend throwing tennis balls or any projectiles at moving airplanes as they go overhead.
Let's face it. I couldn't hit it. I'm not good at it. What am I, Devin Williams?
It is a little off-putting, you know, wherever you are. And remember a year ago, we were in St. Martin and that airport there is world renowned for. I mean, the airplane practically lands on the 50 feet of beach that's at the end of the runway. And so people stand there like idiots, you know, and get the direct jet blast as it's getting set to take off or almost touch the wheels as it's coming in. And, you know, I don't want to be there the one day the pilot kind of misjudges things, you know, and takes out several swimmers, you know, along the way.
Also, what a terrible way to spend the time. It's like, what are we doing today? We're going to go watch the plane land. Yeah. We're in St. Martin. There's everything else to do.
Yes. It's one of those that you get there once, you see it, you go, man, that's really close.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, I'm going to go snorkeling, you know, or go see the rest of the island, whatever it is that you might need. Whether you're flying all the way down to the Caribbean or just 21 minutes to Eau Claire, you know, there's all kinds of great flight stories that people get for their own little getaways.
Love it when the National News finds Wisconsin to be quaint.
We're adorable.
We're just so
adorable.
Just pat us on the head and give us a kringle.
Send a kringle. That reminds me. We'll talk more with Luke later on Top Chef. But there, I'll just tell you that one of the big challenges last night on the show was just kind of a very open ended. Just said, give us something dairy based, and so they had to do all kinds of things with dairy. And again, in the hands of these very talented chefs.
Say it, Pat.
What? The chef testants. I wasn't going to hit you with that. I'm
please,
a
like
person.
You. Okay, all right.
I did it off air right before the show to kind of get you to wake up here. But again, that just the talent, and they're only given 45 minutes, you know, start to finish to make these things. And they just blow me away. So just a heads up that we're going to talk to Luke about that a little bit later on. But let's hit a little sports here at 6:16. William Contreras had three hits, and the Brewers used one big inning to edge the Pittsburgh Pirates 3-2 on Wednesday night. The Brewers took advantage of a sloppy second inning by the Pirates to turn an error, two walks, and two hit batters, and an RBI single by Contreras into three runs. The Brewers, as you know, have had their starting pitching core decimated by injuries. Bryce Wilson worked 4 1/3 innings, making his second start of the season. He allowed two runs on three hits with three walks and three strikeouts. But given the injuries, Wilson could be on his way to becoming a full-time starter, which was a role he had earlier in his career. They will wrap up the four-game series this morning. Out in Pittsburgh, Freddie Peralta, with his 2-0 record, will be pitching for the Brewers. And you can catch that game. Pre-game starts at 11 a.m. today on News from the Center in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, Oshkosh Air Support, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. As for the Bucks, we're still waiting for any definitive word that Giannis Antetokounmpo will or will not be playing in Game 3 of their Eastern Conference first-round playoff series with the Indiana Pacers. That series is tied at a game apiece. A report from The Athletic says that Giannis is, quote, progressing in his recovery from a calf injury, doing some ball handling drills and stationary jump shooting as he continues to recover from an injury that carries a 2 to 4 week recovery timeline. Antetokounmpo missed the final three games of the regular season and has not played since April 9th. That was 16 days ago, so hopefully he's in the window now, where he could, in fact, start Game 3, which you can catch starting tomorrow at 4 p.m. on News from the Center in Richland Center, Lake Air in Amory, 98Q Country in Park Falls, and locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. All right, coming up next, how Republican legislators are again blocking millions of dollars that could be going to good use in Wisconsin. Wherever you're listening across the Badger State on this beautiful Thursday morning, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be back. I suppose it will not surprise you to learn that when you ask what's new at the state capitol, it will once again involve the majority party not in session, on a paid vacation for, you know, 9 months or so here, but are once again being an impediment to progress in our state. And it's not something that anybody should take any joy in talking about. I certainly don't. I don't want to be talking about ways to take money designed for good use and turn it into something political or partisan. But you have to raise the point when it appears other people are doing just that. We're talking about Republican legislators who have worked so hard for 5 years to do nearly nothing to cooperate with Governor Tony Evers since he unseated Scott Walker, that along with firing a cabinet secretary and department heads and taking the governor's proposed budget bill and throwing it in the trash and writing their own bill rather than working together, they have also found many ways to block funds that, again, the governor and other reasonable people would be using to help others. Recall how last year the Republican-led legislature, through its Joint Finance Committee, blocked millions of dollars for pay raises for employees throughout the University of Wisconsin system until they were able to successfully blackmail the system into pulling back on some of its diversity positions and programs. More recently, we have seen how, despite continued efforts around Wisconsin to free up the funds, there's still not a dime that's been spent of the $125 million meant to address PFAS contamination in Wisconsin drinking water. Again, Republicans are just sitting there on the money, unless they can somehow, again, blackmail Governor Evers and the rest of the state into taking polluters off the hook and making it tougher for the DNR to enforce the people who are polluting our water. These same legislators are sitting on $15 million designed to go toward basically a healthcare emergency in the Chippewa Valley, where two hospitals abruptly closed. They just closed. And that $15 million that had been allocated by the legislature previously, but still hasn't been released by the Joint Finance Committee, could be going to help augment the health services that remain in the Chippewa Valley. But they're sitting on that as well. So you can imagine my lack of surprise when I saw the headlines that said, Republican-led budget panel objects to plans for opioid settlement funds. The money from the opioid settlement that is supposed to be coming to Wisconsin has been stalled. The headline in the Cap Times says, opioid treatment money stalled by anonymous Wisconsin legislator. And the Wisconsin Public Radio version of the story says, Republicans on the legislature's budget committee have blocked a plan from Governor Evers' administration on how to spend millions of dollars from a legal settlement with opioid manufacturers and distributors. In all, because of a national lawsuit against the pharmaceutical industry, Wisconsin, between now and 2038, is going to get $750 million total in annual installments. And again, recently, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services released a plan to how to spend the next tranche of money that they're going to get, $36 million in fiscal year 2025. The legislature could look at that and say that that is a sound plan. We have a huge problem with opioid addiction. We need the funds for recovery. Let's put that $36 million to work right away. Instead, they are sitting on the $36 million. And the way that they can do that through the Joint Finance Committee is all it takes is one member of the majority, and Republicans control that committee 12 to 4, any one of those 12 Republicans can object. And you don't even have to know who they are. One legislator can anonymously object to something, and the Joint Finance Committee will sit on the money until they decide what to demand from something in the administrative branch, whether it's the Department of Health Services or the DNR when it comes to PFAS money. Again, money that has already been designated. And yet the legislature added this extra step of saying, no, you got to come to the Joint Finance Committee every time, hat in hand, saying, Mother, may I, and we have to agree with what you're doing or we're going to dictate otherwise. And that's exactly what's happening in this case with the opioid settlement money. And the thing is, when the co-chairs, the Republican co-chairs of the Joint Finance Committee, noted that an objection had been raised, Senator Howard Markline and Representative Mark Bourne sent a letter saying that the DHS request is not approved at this time, but the letter did not outline the nature of the objection or any details of any future meeting they'd like to have, according to the WPR story. Needless to say, the folks over at Governor Evers' office are not particularly happy with that. One of his spokespeople put out, and I'm updating the numbers for today here, that as of now, Republicans are on day 57 of refusing to release crisis response resources to stabilize healthcare in western Wisconsin. They are on day 295 of refusing to release funding to fight PFAS statewide, and we are now 2 days into delaying critical resources to respond to the opioid crisis. It's a very real problem. And needless to say, when people in the governor's office are saying that it's just outright shameful they're right. They're absolutely right. Now, again, this is not to say that Republican legislators should feel like, you know, they should just roll over for anything that the governor or the executive branch wants. Far from it. If they would like to be collaborative, the invitation is there. Unless you're waiting for it to be, you know, engraved and the governor is supposed to, you know, serve it while dropping to a knee or something. But the door is always open to say, hey, can we talk about how we're going to spend this money? And by the way, as far as, you know, how the Department of Health Services writes it versus what Republicans would like to see, I think it's right to ask the Republican legislators, what do you know that's so much different? Where is your experience in this, whether you went to, you know, medical school or you're a trained counselor or whatever the case may be? Kind of like they're doing with the PFAS money and the DNR. Again, we know where the experts are. We know where the scientists are. We know where the people are that have boots on the ground and can inform the plan that DHS has written up for the opioid settlement. But somehow you know better, but you don't want to tell us yet. And what that tells me is that there isn't anything substantive to this blocking of the money. They will release it eventually. They objected to some of the spending last year and eventually tweaked the numbers a little bit. They're doing it just because they can. Because they can fire department heads. Because they can throw away entire budget bills. It's something that looks good to the base. Look how tough we are standing up to the governor. But I think to more and more Wisconsinites, they're seeing this is a legislature on a 9-month paid vacation that does not want to get anything done that would be for the benefit of Wisconsin. Joe Zepecki is next. You're up north. Welcome back. Here we are on Thursday mornings, as always, with Joe Zepecki to talk about some of the top stories of the week. Mr. Zepecki, how are you?
I'm good. Will you be leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning, or should I?
for either one of us apparently might have a better memory. Look, like I said yesterday, I'm not going to pile on too much. Of course, I am a little bit.
I am.
I was much more concerned with all the jingoism on either side of it. You know, look, there's a place for patriotism. Don't get me wrong. But, you know.
There is.
It is actually possible to go overboard, and then to add to it, you muff up the one nation under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. If you're a Republican Senate candidate, Eric Hovde is, how many weeks are we going to say this, has not had the best rollout of a Senate campaign.
No, the one that got me, it wasn't so much what he said before or after, which is just kind of awkward. Like he's just, it's like he's trying too hard. Or he's trying to be taken more serious than he is. Like, lighten up, man. Smile more. I don't know. But I saw the flub of the Pledge of Allegiance from Eric Hovde paired with a video where he is on another one of these rants, and that's all the guy does is rant, about how some school district where his wife knows a teacher who's no longer allowed to lead the pledge, and he's talking about it as if this is today's sign of the apocalypse being upon us, and how dare they strip the Pledge of Allegiance out of any educational setting anywhere. And if you're going to be that fired up or that faux fired up about something like that, can you please know the actual words when you're called upon to do the pledge? Come on, man.
It's true. And then yesterday we also broke down a couple of other things he said, which were just such projection about, you know, that Democrats and progressives are the ones dividing the country by race and by gender, when, you know, we clearly see how that track record has played out. But it gets me back to this point. When you're done waving the flag, when you're done criticizing Democrats or Tammy Baldwin or whatever, I'm still waiting to hear, what are you proposing? What are you going to do? And I don't know that we've heard that yet from Mr. Hovde.
No, and in part because he can't get out of his own way. The New York Times reported over the weekend a nursing home that he owns is being sued. And of course, that comes in the wake of him suggesting last week that if you're in a nursing home, you shouldn't be able to vote. And rather than try to move on, and this is where I'll put my strategist hat on, when you're in a bad news cycle, there are things you can do. Just tactical decisions you can make to try to put the story behind you, take the L and move on to the next thing. Mr. Hovde is apparently incapable of doing that. He's making his own problems worse by refusing to let it go. And it all just reeks of the big boss, Mr. Big Bucks, who is never told that he's wrong, is never criticized, is so certain that everything he says is the smartest thing that's ever been said on God's green earth. And that is not the approach we need in the United States Senate. We need our leaders to be a little more humble than that. And he just keeps digging his own hole, particularly what is particularly frustrating about this nonsense from him about, oh, Democrats divide us. Dude, my guy, there is no more divisive figure in American politics today than Donald Trump, who you trotted out as the first opportunity you could to stand on stage next to and accept the endorsement from. Donald Trump is a racist. He is a misogynist. He sees the world in black and white, us versus them. He has vowed to be retribution. There is no more divisive figure in American politics today than Donald Trump. And for Eric Hovde to, with a straight face, try to suggest that Democrats who have had to pick up the slack of, shall we say, the responsibility for responsible governance, and suggest that Democrats are dividing people, that's just not serious. He's just, I don't know who he thinks he's talking to.
Well, and again, I'll want your political consultant hat on for this one. And again, we're not charging Eric Hovde for this, though we should. He also said something about how the way they're going to win is by just asking questions of their Democratic friends and neighbors. But the questions were not actual questions. It was like, are you sick of Joe Biden doing this? Are you sick of Tammy Baldwin doing this? I think what he was trying to do is you can ask questions in a way that says, I want to listen to you. I want to hear what you have to say, not I'm asking a question in order to put words in your mouth.
Right. He's not speaking with voters and trying to meet the moment of what the body politic needs. He's yelling. He's shouting the answers that he believes at people. And what's so bizarre, I just add it to the list. We haven't really had this conversation. We probably don't have enough time for it today. But Eric Hovde, Donald Trump, and every Republican loves to holler about inflation. But they, of course, have no plan to address it themselves. In fact, the only two economic policies that Donald Trump has put forward in this reelection bid run from the Manhattan courtroom that he's sitting in are inflationary. He wants to devalue the U.S. dollar, which would put inflationary pressures on the markets, and he wants to impose additional tariffs, like 100% tariff, on everything coming in from China, which would also be inflationary. So not only does he not have a plan to lower inflation, which, by the way, Joe Biden already is lowering inflation.
Right.
The very economic policies that he's actually putting forward would reverse the progress that we have seen in lowering inflation to the lowest point in the developed world. If you look at the other G7, G8, G10 economies, inflation is lower here than it is there. He wouldn't just stop that progress. He would reverse it. Inflation would be worse under Republicans.
But the problem is, what they're counting on is that most voters aren't going to say, okay, what exactly is your plan? They're just going to hear inflation is high. They're going to hear close the border and not actually, you know, ask what is your plan. For whatever reason, I stumbled upon Donald Trump's 2016 Republican convention acceptance speech. And it was the one where he was talking about crime in Chicago and other big cities. And he says, I alone can stop it. And it will stop on day one when I'm president. Spoiler alert, it did not stop on day one. It never did because he never had a plan.
He doesn't have a plan. He doesn't take governing seriously. It's harder and harder to find any logical rationale for any of this other than they want power for power's sake. And when you look at the likes of Eric Hovde and his $2.7 billion valuation bank that he owns and his brother who gets $2 million from the federal government in the wake of a global pandemic and now has turned around. And in the first 10 weeks of his brother's campaign, has spent $1 million on his brother's campaign. It really looks an awful lot like rich guys want to get in power so they can cut taxes for rich guys like themselves.
And which and really is the only plan.
Right. Right. I mean, and that's what does that have to do with inflation exactly? I'm not sure either.
I don't think so. In Congress, what did pass this week was the foreign aid package of bills, also included the TikTok bill, but we'll set that aside, for Ukraine, for Israel, for Taiwan. And Tammy Baldwin voted yes. Ron Johnson voted no. Ron Johnson again said, well, it doesn't have anything in there for the border. Hello. Self-awareness. Could you go meet with Ron Johnson, please? Or any other Republican saying, well, there wasn't anything on the border there. Your boy Trump told you to kill the bipartisan deal, and you did. And yet somehow some news outlets are still just putting up the Ron Johnson quote of, oh, I voted no because there wasn't any border protection. Newsrooms, if you're not putting the other half of that on there, you're doing it wrong.
And Lindsey Graham acknowledged that fact this week on the floor of the United States Senate that mm-hmm. Trump killed the deal. And this is what's – Republicans are just not very good at governing. And so if you don't want Washington to work, okay, fine, go vote for Republicans. They had a deal that would have done what was ultimately passed for Ukraine and could have gotten really, really tough border measures out of it. And they scuttled the deal and got less than they could have 2 months ago. Art of what deal? Like, what are we doing here? And I want to call it not just Ron Johnson doing the wrong thing again and Tammy Baldwin doing the right thing, as she almost always does. If you look at the members of Congress, when it comes to Ukraine, every Democrat did the right thing. Former Congressman Mike Gallagher did the right thing. But Brian Stile, Derek Van Orden, Scott Fitzgerald, and Glenn Grothman said no. They said no to an allied nation fighting for its very existence and freedom against a totalitarian monster in Vladimir Putin who has marched on Ukraine. And they said, no, we don't care. Enough's enough. That vote is going to look even worse 5, 10, 15, 20, and 25 years from today than it does today. And it looks pretty bad today.
It really does. I don't joke lightly when I refer to it as the Putin-Trump caucus that these folks mm-hmm. are still voting to support. In terms of Senator Baldwin, again, you know, voting for the aid packages, that's just some of what she has been winning on recently. We've certainly seen things that the Biden administration has implemented. But, you know, what kind of record is she taking to the voters based on, you know, kind of recent events at the Capitol?
It's a GSD. I don't think I can say all those words on the radio agenda. This is the other part of the hilarity of Eric Hovde's campaign. He's suggesting that Tammy Baldwin is not a good legislator. Get out of here, man. Historic civil rights legislation passed because of Tammy Baldwin. Made in America legislation passed and is now the law of the land because of Tammy Baldwin. Made in America provisions that were signed into law by both Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And we are seeing the fruits of those labors. Rick Barrett of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported this week that right here in Wisconsin, for the first time in years, high-speed broadband components are being manufactured onshore right here, not just in America, but in Wisconsin. That is a win for workers. It's a win for local communities. It's a win for the United States. And it's something a lot of politicians like to talk about. It's bringing back American jobs. Tammy Baldwin has actually done it. And we've seen the other big one that I've been noticing, because Joe Biden was thanked for it, but it wouldn't have happened without Tammy Baldwin, the work to save pensions under the mm-hmm. Butch Lewis Act for retired Teamsters. This is not a handout. This is every paycheck for their career. These truck drivers were putting money away into their pension, and then greedy Wall Street tycoons blew the stack, and all of these folks were going to be left holding the bag without government intervention. And Tammy Baldwin gets it done. It's what she does. She delivers for people.
And honestly, that commercial that she's running right now is so good. Of course, it won't happen. But I'm saying if she only ran that commercial frequently between now and November, that would be enough. It is so real and direct to Wisconsin families who worked hard, were getting screwed over by Wall Street, and she came to their rescue. It's such good messaging. The Biden administration picked up a couple of other wins for workers. We mentioned yesterday on the program, new rules for overtime, getting rid of the non-competes. I mean, seeing both of those headlines, you know, on the same day on Tuesday, Joe, that was a big day in terms of, you know, labor history when you look back at what this administration's been doing.
Totally. It is the Scranton Joe administration working for workers as opposed to the last administration, which works for millionaires and billionaires and is trying to get back in there. I'll add one more that's really good for consumers and was announced yesterday, which is airlines will now be forced to give you automatic refunds on delayed or canceled flights, cash. No more of this flight voucher nonsense stuff where they get to keep the money and expect you to remember, you know, 11 months from now, oh crap, I got to use that voucher that they gave me. You're getting your money back. That's a big win for consumers. It's another win for the Biden administration.
All right. Only a couple seconds left here. Game 3, Bucks this time at Indiana. Are they going to be a viable playoff team when we talk a week from now?
We can't win this series if Giannis doesn't get in the mix. And clearly there's something going on with the calf that is very concerning. But as currently constituted, without Giannis, we can't win this series.
That calf and Christian Yelich's back, I tell you, are just the Achilles heel of Wisconsin sports. Joe Sopecki, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
We got today's history lesson coming up in just a bit. Here up. Fitzgerald.
Somewhere there's music. How faint the tune. Somewhere there's heaven. How high the moon.
Ella Fitzgerald was born this day in 1917. And I think, Greg, when we were speaking earlier this hour about just playing hooky, what would air in our place? Let's just drop the needle on an Ella Fitzgerald record.
Yeah.
One of these times. Just take off.
Yeah.
Kristen Lyerly joins us as well. She would second that notion.
I think that's a great idea. But do you know what I think of when I think of Ella Fitzgerald?
What?
I think of that old commercial where she sings and breaks the glass.
Oh, my good Memorex.
Oh. Yes.
She also plugged, I think, KFC back in the 80s.
Okay, I don't remember that part, but yeah, I remember Memorex. It was, you know, the cassette tapes, and that it was such a good tape that you could play the tape back of her singing, and it would shatter the glass.
I definitely remember holding a wine glass and trying to shatter it.
No way.
Oh, for sure. With my voice, not...
You know. With your voice. You know, and you know why that didn't work? You hadn't developed your mom voice yet.
Right.
It was your mom voice that could do that.
I should try it again.
Yeah. Al Pacino is 84 years old today.
And his child's like 2.
Yeah. That is wild.
I mean, again, this roster, Godfather, Scent of a Woman, Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico, Donnie Brasco, Any Given Sunday, Scarface, and Justice for All. He's working on a new one, too, because, again, like you said, he's got to pay for another kid. 84 years old today. Actress Renee Zellweger is 55 years old today. On this day in 1970, the Beatles' Let It Be was removed from the top spot on the charts by the Jackson 5. On this day in 1987, U2 began a 9-week run in the number one spot from their fifth album, The Joshua Tree, including Where the Streets Have No Name. Which,
Goosebumps.
By the way, I don't think we'll hear any of the lyrics because I just love this part so much.
Goosebumps.
Yep.
And I used to play this song live with a band, and I still get goosebumps.
Yeah. On this day in 1992, the rap duo of Chris Kelly and Chris Smith, otherwise known as Chris Cross, had a number one hit while they were both 13 years old.
Sorry, there we go.
Remember they wore their pants backwards?
Yeah. And their shirts. Everything.
Yeah, everything is backwards.
Yep.
2 years later, 1994, a jury ruled that Michael Bolton's 1991 hit Love is a Wonderful Thing plagiarized the Isley Brothers' 1966 song with the same name and awarded $5 million in damages, the largest ever in a music plagiarism case. You all be the judge. Let's start with Michael Bolton's 1991 version of Love is a Wonderful Thing. Very nice, very catchy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the Isley Brothers from 1966.
It's practically a remake.
I come at it from completely different. They have those same five words in common. Not much else. I'm not hearing anything derivative of that. I suppose you'd have to play both the music tracks, take the vocals out and hear, but I'm not hearing it musically. I'm just hearing
the way they deliver Love is a Wonderful Thing, though. It just sounds.
With the same pace. The same rhythm.
Again, every song on the charts has a rhythm kind of like that. He should have just adjusted it. Like, maybe Love is a Many Splendored Thing. Then Doris Day would probably sue. Sure, we can come up with something there. Let's see. Edward R. Murrow, the legendary newsman, was born this day in 1908. And on this day in 2014, the Flint water crisis began. And it began from the same budget austerity that we see from far too many politicians. It began when officials in Flint switched the city's water supply to the Flint River instead of getting it from, you know, the Detroit Water Department because of, you know, financial pressures. And the Flint River was contaminated as opposed to Detroit's water, which was had treated and clean. And so many people, so many children ended up with high lead levels and health issues as a result. And that was 10 years ago today that got started in Flint, Michigan. On the national calendar today, this is National Drug Take Back Day, which is I remember when this came out, I'm like, who's got leftover pills? I mean,
everybody.
You get a prescription and you take
everybody
them.
Everybody does.
Yeah, I have now figured out in my advancing age, as I'm taking more pills than ever before. And sometimes, they switch your prescription. And so take them and dispose of them safely. Check in with your local law enforcement. They usually have a box someplace where you can take back drugs that you're not using. Don't throw them in the landfill. Don't let them get into the water supply.
You mean the guy in the back of behind the building isn't a cop? I've been giving him my pills. Oopsies.
Today is World Malaria Day. It's National Telephone Day for some reason. It's International Noise Awareness Day, National License Plate Day. It's World Penguin Day. It's Take Our Sons and Daughters to Work. Because we got tired of the, you know, Take Our Daughters to Work Day. Well, what about the sons? So, okay,
I
take our sons
that.
And daughters to work. no, you really cannot. No. No.
Well, you could
to the
Dr.
obstetrician
Lyerly, just
gynecologist, do not take your sons to work today.
You could take your sons to work and they can just sit outside and be like, please fill out this form, and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Today is International Girls in ICT Day, which is Information and Communications Technology, all about emphasizing the importance of STEM education. It's National Hug a Plumber Day.
Oh,
No.
No, thanks.
It is Hairstylist Appreciation Day, and it's National Lingerie Day. So you can combine those in any way that you want. If your plumber shows up in lingerie, you know that they're just taking the calendar quite literally as we move along here. Kristen, we're going to speak quite seriously after the news about the Supreme Court arguments on the Idaho abortion ban and, you know, to what degree is the Idaho ban running counter to or even somehow supersedes federal law about treating patients who have, you know, who are in active labor. So we're going to get into the details. I just want you, as you were hearing the arguments, especially from the conservative justices, I'm just wondering what you thought as you were hearing them make their points.
The language that they were using was really not surprising to me, but disappointing. It was not scientific. It was not legal. It was emotional.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get into more of that coming up after the news.